Good morning and welcome to the Dance to Learn podcast with your host, Jessica Strong. The Dance to Learn podcast is the place for dance educators and studio owners to get the best dance teacher resources, tips, and advice to help you dance, learn, and grow right along with your students. Let's get into today's episode. Hello, dance teacher friends. Happy Wednesday. Welcome to a new episode of the Dance to Learn podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Strong, and today I am sharing a slideshow on how to help your youngest dancers, your preschool age dancers, and their parents with separation anxiety in class. And this is also a lesson that I have partnered with Erin Bird, the Erin Bird Show, as well. So if you follow Erin Bird, you might also catch me live on her show with this presentation as well. So I'm not with Erin for the podcast, but I know that her live show is going to be great, so if you want to catch that episode as well, I will be sure to share the link with you in today's podcast description. But let's dive into separation anxiety. And if you are following along on YouTube today, on our YouTube channel, I am sharing the slideshow there so you can actually see. So if you want to see the slideshow and listen, I know I'm a visual learner, so that helps me sometimes. But if you'd prefer just to listen today, totally fine as well. So let's dive into this. So as a dance teacher, I am a member of several dance teacher groups, and something that I have noticed quite a bit of, and I'm guilty of this as well, so I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I have never said some of these things as it pertains to separation anxiety, but I do feel a sense that a lot of us as dance teachers, we get very frustrated with parents and children who don't want to separate. They don't want to go into dance class without mom or dad. And it can cause, you know, it can be a little anxious for everybody, I think, in those scenarios. So I want to talk about what separation anxiety is not, and some of the terms that I have used, and some of the terms that I've seen other dance teachers or other teachers in our profession use as well. So the first one is saying that this is just a phase. So while that's partly true as it pertains to separation anxiety, I think something that we should all remember is that anxiety is a medical condition, and we all suffer from it to some degree. I know I personally suffer from social anxiety. If I'm in a large group of people and I don't know anybody, I get very nervous and anxious, and you know, I'm not comfortable going up and just talking to a person that I don't know who they are. I don't know how they're going to respond to me. That makes me very anxious and very nervous. And so for us to think that a 2 or 3 year old should be able to regulate these senses of anxiety on their own when they are so young and so new to this planet, I think that that's a lot to ask for them. So I think number one, it's important. We're going to talk about some of the age groups that separation anxiety affects, and it does affect adults as well. So I don't want us to think that this is just a phase and they'll snap out of it by the time they're 3, because it can plague some children for quite a while. Another phrase that I've heard, this is more in regards to the parents. You know, we call them helicopter parents or overprotective. They're just being overprotective of their child. And this is one that I have used myself personally when I was a younger teacher. And I understand the frustration, you know. Here a parent has hired me to teach their child dance, and they want to stand in the corner and, you know, tell their child, oh, you better listen. Oh, put that down. Don't run. And they're sort of taking over my job. I can understand that's frustrating, but we need to remember, again, that separation anxiety can affect adults And so we need to be a little bit more empathetic with these adults, I think, as we teach their little ones. I've also heard words like clingy, they're being crybabies, things like that. Clinginess is a sign of separation anxiety. But, you know, again, it's because that's their comfort, right? They're not clinging to mom, you know, they're not trying to do it on purpose or anything like that. It's just that's making them feel better, right? That's their comfort at the moment. Another phrase that kind of drives me crazy when I hear this one used, it's saying, be a big girl, be a big boy and come to dance class, right? I have an issue with this phrase just because technically they aren't big boys and big girls. They're 2 and 3. They're so new. And I just feel like that a phrase like that really diminishes their feelings. And we do have to remember they're little people and they have feelings. And so we want to acknowledge that and help them feel safe. The last one that I've heard in the dance community is that, oh, these kids just aren't ready for dance. And hopefully after today, I will give you some solutions to show you that these kids are ready for dance. We just have to change what that might look like for them. So stick around till the end and we're going to get into that. So now I want to talk about anxiety and I want to talk about what it is. And I will be sure to share all of my resources in today's podcast description so you can check on these because I am not a medical professional, so I want to put that out there. So this is just research that I have performed into separation anxiety and what it is. So separation anxiety is actually a disorder, and put together, it's separation anxiety disorder, and you might also hear it referred to as SAD, S-A-D. So SAD is a disorder in which a child becomes excessively anxious when separated from parents. Children are especially prone to separation anxiety during times of stress. So I want to pinpoint this because a brand new dance class for a child, if they've never danced before, it can be stressful for several reasons. Number one, they don't know the teacher. Number two, they don't know the other kids. Number three, they're being put into a big empty room. you know, I know to us it doesn't seem that scary, but to a little child walking into a big empty room, it could definitely feel a little scary. It's loud. There's loud music that goes on in those rooms. So, I think we need to be cognizant of how stressful this can be for a little one who's only 2 or 3 years old. Separation anxiety does differ from normal clinginess. Now, clinginess is a symptom of separation anxiety, which I'll get to here in the next couple slides, but separation anxiety is different. They will cling, but I've met several kids who were overly clingy with mom or dad when they are dropped off, but can separate just fine. So just because a child is clingy does not necessarily mean that they are suffering from this disorder. So just something to keep in mind. Children with SAD, typically they can't think about anything else except for that present fear of separation. So this might even result in things like nightmares, or they might even complain about things. You might get a little one who says, my tummy hurts, or maybe, you know, their ears hurt. It could be a whole number of things. And they also are going to be reluctant to go to school in other places like dance class. Treatment for SAD can include things like talk therapy, and sometimes in more severe cases, they might even have to be put on anti-anxiety medication, which if you're an adult, you probably know one or two people, if not more, that are adults and on anti-anxiety medication themselves. So I think that's, again, important to understand that this plagues, anxiety plagues a lot of people of all ages. Some additional facts on separation anxiety. So this is actually, it is a normal part of child development. So I know that statement, it's just a phase. It is partly true because separation anxiety can commonly occur in babies between the ages of 8 and 12 months old is when it's going to be most common. And generally, under normal circumstances, it would probably disappear around age 2. However, it can also occur in adults. I know for myself personally, I have times where I suffer separation anxiety when, you know, my husband, he plays in a band, and so he has late night gigs. And if he's not home and it's time to go to bed, I have a hard time falling asleep because I'm anxious. I want him home because I worry about him, you know, driving at night. There could be drunk drivers. There could be anything, really. But I want him home. So I understand that this is also very much can be a situation that can plague adults as well. So parents might have a hard time separating from their child. 3 to 4% of school-aged children and teenagers also suffer from SAD. So if you see it in slightly older children, it's probably a more aggressive form of anxiety, and we should really treat those cases with a little bit more empathy and possibly even provide parents, you know, we don't want to diagnose anybody's child, but maybe suggest, you know, have they, you know, been tested for any type of anxiety, and just kind of see what the parent says. SAD tends to indicate general mood and mental health issues. So around 1/3 of children with separation anxiety disorder will be diagnosed with a mental illness as an adult. And I mean, that's the realization that, you know, again, it's not just a phase. This is definitely something that could plague somebody for their entire life. So just keep that in mind when we have these little ones and parents who come to our studio and are suffering from separating from each other. So I want to talk about more about the symptoms now. I'll try to go through these pretty quickly. So the symptoms of separation anxiety, they can include clinging to parents. I know we talked about that already. It could be extreme and severe crying. My general rule for my classes, if a child is crying, I do not bring them in the dance studio. I let them stay outside with mom as long as possible. Sometimes they never make it into the dance studio, which is fine. I tell the mom, you know what? I totally understand. This is normal. You take all the time you need. If they aren't ready today, come back next time and it'll be a baby steps. You know, we'll get them comfortable and we'll work it out together. But it's important to be empathetic and understanding in those situations, of course. They will refuse to do things that require separation. They'll say, I don't want to dance. I want to stay with you, or mom, come with me into the dance studio. You know, you'll see a lot of that type of stuff. Physical illness, such as headaches or vomiting. I'll do a little story time because I actually had this happen to me. I was a new teacher. I was an assistant teacher and I was new to preschool age. Fairly new. I'd been teaching at that point, I think, for about 3 years. But they had me assisting, which was great. And we had a ballet tap combo class and there were about 15 kids in this class. So it was a fairly big class. Which is why they hadn't had me as an assistant. And the first day of the class, we invited all of the parents and all of the kids in to let them meet us. We chatted with them, answered any questions, had them help get their little ones changed into their proper shoes. And as we were about to start the class and we asked all the parents to leave, it just, I've never seen so many children at one time get so upset. It was really, I think, you know, and I think what it was because the parents came in the room and the parents then left. So I'll talk a little bit more later on in this episode on how, on some solutions to that. But yeah, and one little girl in particular was crying so hard. She did actually end up vomiting all over me, the teachers, and other kids. And it was just so bad. Which is why I say if they're crying, I tend to say, you know, I'm not going to force any child. How traumatic would that be? I'm not going to force them into the dance room. And if they start crying once they're in there, I'm going to send them out to mom and dad and say, you know what, let's go out and see mommy and daddy and make sure that, you know, you come back when you're ready. You know, cause it's important that we take care of them, and make them feel safe. But yeah, she did. She made herself so upset. She was so upset, about separating that she did. And we ended up canceling that first class. We recognized that, okay, this is probably not going to work today. Let's try again next week. They might also have really violent or emotional temper tantrums. So beyond just crying, they might be screaming, kicking, just being really emotionally upset. They'll refuse to go to school. They'll refuse to go to dance, wherever they need to be separated. And they might show poor school performance. In a dance studio, you might see poor attention spans. Because again, they're so focused on where mommy or daddy is that they may not be able to focus on you. So if you see a child who's, you know, not very attentive, there could be something else going on there, like separation anxiety. They're going to fail to interact in a healthy manner with other children. So they might have a hard time socially in a dance class setting or even in a school setting. They'll refuse to sleep alone. They'll want to sleep with mommy or daddy, and they might have a lot of nightmares. So those are some of the symptoms, and I know some of these could be attached to other things, but just something to keep in mind when trying to figure out if a child or a parent is suffering from separation anxiety. So I want to quickly dive into the child development side of this. How does the developing child learn to understand how to separate from parents, and at what stage should this normally occur? So I follow Jean Piaget and his theory of child development. And in his developmental theory, stage one is the sensory motor stage. And this stage takes place from ages birth to age two. And so number one, this first stage is when children learn to understand separation anxiety. And there's a key developmental milestone that occurs in this first stage. So it should theoretically happen fairly quickly, but we are seeing delays. So we'll talk about that a little bit. But separation anxiety, as I mentioned earlier, it is a normal part of child development. And the sensory motor stage is the first stage of our child's lives. And according to Jean Piaget's theory of child development, this stage begins when we are born and it lasts through age two, so toddler age. And this is the first stage of development that children begin to experience separation anxiety. Remember, it's going to be most common between those ages of one to two, but it can linger and last a little bit longer. And they do learn a key developmental milestone that should help them regulate this anxiety and this fear. So sensory motor stage is, again, from ages birth to age two. And within this stage, so within our first 2 years of life, Piaget determines that there are six sub-stages to our brain development within this short amount of time. So really, our babies are and our toddlers are learning so much so fast within their first just 2 years of life. So I'll quickly go through these stages, these sub-stages, I should say, of the sensory motor stage. So the first stage is reflexive. So you're going to see our baby's reflexes a lot more when they're newborn and their first couple months of life. And these are going to be things like learning how to breathe. That's a natural reflex. Our body reflexes naturally in order to breathe. It'll be like a grasping reflex where if you put your finger in your baby's hand, they'll grasp it. The feeding reflex, where if you touch a baby's cheek, they'll know to turn their head to find a feeding source, things like that. The next substage is called primary circular reactions. So primary circular reactions, this primary refers to individual or self. And then circular means repeat. And then reaction is obviously how we react to that. So this stage is basically the baby is reacting to stimulants that they're creating themselves. So for example, the baby could coo, right? The baby hears this fun new noise that they just made and they want to do it again. So that's the circular. They're going to repeat it because it was fun. And the reaction to that is the repetition. And the brain's reaction is, that was fun, I'm going to do it again. Same thing with something like learning, they kick their leg for the first time, right? Ooh, that was fun. I didn't know my body could do that. Let's try that again. And they're going to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. And that's how they learn. So then the next stage is secondary circular reactions, and secondary meaning outside stimulants. So this could be something where a baby sees a rattle, and I'm going to rattle this rattle, and it's going to make noise. That was fun. I'm going to do that again. So this is more reacting to outside stimulants. The next stage, the fourth stage, is coordinating secondary circular reactions. And in this stage, the baby is really starting to combine those first two circular reaction subcategories together. So this is where the baby is going. They're making decisions now, right? So they're combining these two developmental stages together to make decisions. So for example, it could be, I see my rattle, it's across the room, I want to shake it. How can I do that? I'm going to crawl to the rattle, pick it up, and I'm going to shake it. So they're starting to put these processes together. The next stage is the tertiary circular reaction stage. In this stage of development, this is where they start to see how their actions can get a response from others, right? So this is going to be more, there's always that, I call it the gravity stage, where the kids, they just want to throw everything, right? And then they're sitting in their high chair and they throw their bottle on the floor and then mom comes and picks up the bottle and they do it again. And it's a constant repeat. That's this stage, right? They're learning, if I do this, what happens? So it's sort of that reaction, or what kind of reaction am I going to get? And this usually tends to start between like 18 months to 2 years old. They're going to start seeing how their actions can cause a reaction from their parents or maybe a teacher or a friend, something like that. And then the last substage within the sensory motor stage of development is symbolic representational thought. And this is really important. This is when a child can look at a symbol. It could be an illustration in a storybook, and they can recognize that illustration as, oh, that's a puppy, or that's a rabbit. So they're starting to understand more symbolic representations of their world. So as far as separation anxiety, and as far as when our children start to learn this, they're going to learn this in that fourth substage. So this was that coordinating secondary circular reactions. So this was when that baby decides, I want to crawl across the room, I want to pick up my rattle, and I want to rattle it, right? So this stage tends to happen when a child is between 8 to 12 months old. They'll begin to combine their learned abilities and reflexes to achieve certain goals. And their behavior really does become goal-directed. They want to reach for an object, or they want to find an object that's hiding under something else. Once they reach this stage where, you know, I think my rattle is hiding under my blanket, right? This is called object permanence. And this is that key developmental milestone within the sensory motor stage that's going to help them understand and hopefully regulate separation anxiety. And that word again is object. It's two words, object permanence. And so at this point, our babies are able to plan and coordinate their actions in response to their thoughts. So this is a pretty major milestone. But what exactly is object permanence? So object permanence is, according to Piaget, is developing this idea that, or understanding that an object continues to exist even if the object is no longer seen or heard. So an example of this would be, let's say your baby is playing with their rattle and they're having so much fun playing with it, and then they drop their rattle and it goes under the sofa and they can't see it anymore. The first time this happens, that child is going to think that their rattle is gone forever. This really fun thing, I just had it in my hand, now I don't anymore, it's gone forever. When the parent comes, you know, because the parent's going to hear baby crying, what's going on? When the parent comes to check on baby, they're going to say, oh, it's okay, here's your rattle, and they're going to give it back to the baby. So it's this idea of, oh, okay, so, you know, it went away, but now it's back again. How does that work? And so this is just a really important understanding that just because I don't see it, I don't hear it anymore, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And little things, little scenarios like that should happen repeatedly with the child. And so some things that parents should really do at this age is play games like peekaboo. You know, the first time, I don't know if you've ever had the chance to play peekaboo with a baby for the first time. The first time, their reaction, you never know, they're either going to cry because they actually thought you went away, or they might find it super funny and they might laugh, right? But peekaboo is really great because it's teaching them that I went away for a minute, but now I'm back, you know? So it's teaching them this idea of object permanence. You couldn't see me or hear me for a second, but yet here I am. I still exist. Playing games like hide and seek. You know, you can hide the baby's toys under little washcloths and see if they can find them. You know, so games of hide and seek, I think, with little ones are also really important to build on this idea of object permanence. So why I wanted to do this particular topic or discuss this particular topic is because we are still within a pandemic. We're still feeling the results of the pandemic. And so my question is, we're 2 years, March coming up in a couple weeks is the 2 year anniversary of, you know, when the pandemic really truly started. And so that means in a year, we're going to start seeing these babies that were born at the start of the pandemic. They're going to start coming to dance class. And so my question is, are they getting the stimulation they need to understand object permanence and understand the idea that mommy and daddy will still exist even if I don't see them or hear them? So why do I think the pandemic is going to have an effect on this. So number one, right? Working from home is a new normal for many families. And so my concern is that young children aren't experiencing their mom and dad leaving for the day and then returning later because they're home all the time, right? So unless mom and dad are doing a really good job of playing those games like peekaboo or hide and seek and making sure that the baby gets their toy back if it falls under the sofa, if these things aren't happening, this could really delay their understanding of object permanence. Separation anxiety is more with the parents. If the parents are always around and the child never sees mommy and daddy leave for work or leave to wherever it is they're going, it's going to be very, very challenging for them to separate from mom and dad for a dance class. And I think as dance teachers, we need to be prepared for this. And I think we need to be prepared to see a delay, meaning we're going to see 3, 4, and 5-year-olds possibly that are suffering from separation anxiety is what I think is going to happen as a result of the pandemic. So, and I also believe that if parents are used to being home with their child all the time, I also believe this is going to extend to parents as well. I think we're going to see an increase in parents who have a harder time separating. So what does this mean for us as dance teachers? So I want to provide a couple ideas for you so you can start planning for I'm going to call them the little pandemic babies that are going to start coming to our dance studios. And you might already have some of them if you open up your classes to 2-year-olds. You might be seeing them already coming in. The most important thing that we need to do is build trust. We need to build trust with both the parent and we need to build trust with the child. It's the only way it's ever going to work, because separation anxiety, a big part of it is knowing I'm safe with these people. I'm safe in this environment. This is fun. I'm safe and I'm fine. If they're stressed and feel scared and feel like they're not safe, it's not going to work. So what I would strongly recommend, if you don't already, before these dancers come into their very first class, offer them a tour of your studio, if you can, if that's an option. And ideally, I wouldn't recommend doing it during your busiest times when there's lots of other people, lots of other kids, you know, it's 15 minutes before classes start and your studio's crazy. If you can, I would schedule this during your non-busy times, so during times when there are no classes going. And if you can, I would additionally suggest having the teacher of that class be there for the tour if you can. This way, the parent and the child can meet the teacher. This way, it's quiet. You can show them all of the rooms. You can show them where the class is going to be. You can talk about your policies with them. You can sort of explain what your observation policy is so that they understand it. You can explain dress code. You can explain all of those things, and the parent can ask their questions. So I would definitely try to make that happen. Now, I know for my case, because I teach at a rec center, I have no control, and people sort of sign up throughout the session, and it's very out of my hands because the rec center takes care of the registration and all of that, and they are not my employees. So for me, it's a little different. So what I do, if you're in a situation like that where maybe, gosh, I can't really offer a tour, then I would say the next best thing would be to create an email series of what they can expect and how they can be prepared for their first class. And I would make this series a video series. This way they can see your face, they can hear your voice, they can get a sense of you and your personality, and all of those things. And, you know, and another option, if you can't do the tour, Zoom is such a great way to connect with people if you can't get there face to face. The next best thing would be a Zoom, a private Zoom with the parent and the child, and let them ask their questions, because the biggest thing is going to be building trust. with both parent and child. So it's really important that we make that connection before that very first class. So once the first class comes, it's the first day of dance class. Number one, make sure that the instructor knows that there's going to be a new student coming to the class, and be sure that they are there 15 minutes early. And they're not there 15 minutes early to set up the class. They're there 15 minutes early for that parent and for that child to meet them, to answer questions, to sort of help if there is any sign of, you know, separation anxiety. Number one, we don't want to make these parents feel guilty, and we don't want to make the child feel guilty. We want to be very empathetic and saying things like, you know, if she's not ready yet, it's totally fine. She can come in whenever she's ready. And if she's not ready today, that's totally normal. We'll try it again next time. There, you know, there is no pressure to come in and dance today if you're not ready. And I think that that, you know, is going to make a difference on where these parents end up dancing. You know, if the studio is understanding and empathetic to their needs, they're going to stick with you. If you're not as understanding and you want to try to force, you know, the separation to happen, I don't think you're going to have success in keeping a whole lot of these parents and kids in your studio. The day of the class too. So this is where I sort of wanted to talk about, I did a story time earlier about the little girl who threw up in that ballet tap combo class that I was assisting. So we canceled that first class, and what we ended up doing was we came up with a routine. We called it our entering the classroom routine, and we emailed the parents and let them know ahead of time so they were aware of what the routine would be. And it was a Dancer Express choo-choo train. And so what we did was the next class, we met the parents and the kids in the lobby. And, you know, we got the kids, had the kids get on the Dancer Express choo-choo train, and we had a little choo-choo bell, and we blew the bell. And the kids sort of lined up with their little dance bags and their little shoes, and they waved to mommy, and we took them into the room without mom or dad. Because I have noticed that when the parents are in the room, it's that much harder to separate. So my big, if you have an observation policy that parents are in the room, which we follow that just because our spaces are so small, we don't have room to fit 10 kids plus parents. So we have a, you know, parent observation policy where the parents can be outside of the room to observe, but they are not in the room. So that's our observation policy. But I'm not sure where I was going with that. I lost my train of thought for a second, but that's what we did. We put them on the Dancer Express choo-choo train. They said goodbye, and the dancers went into the back, and we had no problems at that point going forward. So I would say don't let the parents inside the room, because it's that much harder to get them to leave the room. And then in the kids' mind at that point, they think parents are going to stay, and then it's going to be traumatic when the parent leaves. So just a piece of advice. And then I always allow my dancers to bring a comfort buddy. This is usually a stuffed animal. Their comfort buddy cannot be a person. I've had people go, oh, can she bring her grandpa? That's her comfort buddy. No, it can't be a person, unfortunately. But if she has, you know, a teddy bear, or I've had kiddos bring blankets. Sometimes, honestly, their comfort buddy, I know this sounds crazy, but it's, I want to wear a princess dress today. That if that's what makes them feel more comfortable, and as long as the princess dress, you know, is safe to dance and move in, then they get to wear the princess dress. I'd much rather them in the studio dancing in a princess dress than being uncomfortable in a leotard and tights. And that's my philosophy. So allow those dancers to bring a comfort buddy with them that they can hold on to or be with during that first class to make it feel a little less scary. Now, no matter how much you prepare, no matter how much you try to build that rapport and trust with parents and children, you're still going to have those kids that need extra support, right? You're still going to have the kids that do not, under any circumstances, want to separate. They're just not ready to separate from mom yet. So This is where I would say you need to offer a parent and me class. So I have a parent and me class that I have ran successfully for, gosh, I want to say it's been going, well, it's been going for a long time. I stopped it for a while because I really just needed to revamp it and change some things. So, but I would say successfully it's been running for the past 6 years. And I open up my parent and me class for ages 18 months to 3. And I include that age of 3 because I know that I still have those 3-year-olds who have a hard time. So I keep it open for them so that they can, if they're not ready for creative dance without mom, I can easily say, you know what, why don't you guys come 30 minutes earlier, try mommy and me, see if that class works better for you. And it usually does. And I can build that rapport and that trust with both the parent and the child, and it works wonders. I would also suggest, just in case, I think we all need to be prepared to have a parent and me class that is for ages 3 and 4 as well. Just with the pandemic and with everything that, you know, these parents and kids have gone through the last couple years, that might be something that we have to consider and have a separate 3 to 4 class if we need it. You know, if we're seeing a huge increase in separation anxiety in our students and our parents, this is going to have to happen in order for us to have a preschool program. So just keep that in mind. My mommy and me program, I include family engagement. What family engagement is this is constant communication with my families and moms outside of the class. I give them things to explore and to do at home. I give them my playlist so that they can dance at home. And then I give them an extra activity that they can do. So it might be play this song and grab a bed sheet and make a pretend parachute and put your stuffed animals in there and watch the stuffed animals dance. Or whatever that family engagement is. But this way, they're dancing at home. And I like family engagement because it also shows them that you're knowledgeable, right? I share, you know, the benefits of parachute play on their child's development. I say, this is why we teach parachute in Mommy and Me. And these are all the benefits of what parachute play does. This is building trust. So now the parent knows, okay, Miss Jessica knows what she's talking about. She's pretty smart and I'm learning stuff too. And my kid is liking the class. My child loves dancing with Miss Jessica. So we're going to keep my child in this program. So that's how you build this trust and rapport with both parents and the children. Now, after your parent and me class, it's really important that you offer a creative dance class, excuse me, that is not a parent participation class. This is a class just for children, children only. I would say my creative dance class is for ages 3 to 5, because again, I know I need 5-year-olds that might need to stay in creative dance for a little bit before they move on to like a pre-ballet class or something. So creative dance right away. Because psychologically, what's going to happen in our mom's brains and our kids' brains as well, they're going to see the little boys and the little girls lined up at the door when they're leaving their mommy and me class. They're going to see these other little ones lined up ready to go for their creative dance class. And they're going to see, oh, look at them. They're going in that class all by themselves. That's pretty impressive. And it's going to tell them there's a next step here. There's a next step to this whole process. And again, they're going to see that the kids are entering the room with confidence. They're not afraid. They are excited for dance class. And so all of these things psychologically for that parent and child that you're building trust with, it's just going to go to that. They're going to remember it and they're going to know that there's a next step. And the key to that is to make sure that the same teacher teaches both the parent and me class, as well as the creative dance class. If it's two different teachers, you're going to be starting over with building that trust. So it needs to be the same teacher that teaches both. It's really the only way it's going to work. And then I create a buddy system to help with that transition. So when it's time for those 2 and 3 year olds who are in the parent and me class, it's time for them to transition into that creative dance class. We still include that comfort buddy. We don't take that away. So that's always an option because teddy bears and comfort buddies, they're really soothing and can help with anxiety. So we say, instead of dancing with mommy today, you're going to dance with your teddy bear. And they bring their teddy bear in, and we include the teddy bear in our classes. We have a whole teddy bear curriculum that we follow to make sure that the kids have that, they can dance with their teddy bear, and it's a smooth transition. We do that. I try to get them weaned away from the teddy bear in the first 3 weeks, but sometimes it can take up to 6. And sometimes, you know, they just want to bring their teddy bear every time. It's sort of like that princess dress thing. You pick and choose your battles. I'd much rather them be in dance class dancing with the teddy bear than not in dance class and not dancing. So I think that's really important to keep in mind. So those are my solutions. I'll recap them very quickly. The first solution is to have that pre-class onboarding, I guess we'll call it, offer a tour or offer an email series, letting them know what to expect, make sure it's videos or face-to-face so they can see you and it's not just words on a page. That's very impersonable. So make sure it's a video series, something where they can see you and get a sense for your personality. Day of class, make sure your teacher is there early to meet with the parent and the child and answer questions and make sure everything is seamless. Don't let the parents in the dance room. Just don't do it. It's going to be that much harder to get them out. Have an entering the classroom routine. Dancer choo-choo works really well for a lot of people. For us, it worked well. And buddy system. Bring those teddy bears. Bring those blankets. Wear your princess dress, whatever needs to happen to come into dance that day. And then create that mommy and me program, complete with family engagement, complete with a next step. What's the next step? Creative dance. And bring those buddies for that creative dance system. So I get asked a lot about mommy and me and resources. It's probably one of the classes I get asked about the most. So I'm excited to share with all of you that I am in the process of recording and uploading my full mommy, we call it Mommy Teddy Bear and Me is the name of our curriculum. It's a Mommy Teddy Bear and Me program, and it's for ages 18 months to 3, as well as parent or caregiver. And it's 10 weeks, and the first 8 weeks, we explore a single dance concept every week. So for example, week 1, we explore action. So we explore locomotion versus non-locomotion. It's a lot of stopping and going, a lot of freeze dance, stuff like that. Week 2 is space. So dancing in general space around the room versus dancing on a spot in self-space. And it'll be 10 weeks. So after 8 weeks, it'll be 2 weeks of a combination of different dance concepts, almost like a review for the moms and the kids. We have a couple lesson plans that are already out. They're available a la carte. Week 1 and week 2 are currently available for purchase on our website, which is learn.dancetolearnuniversity.com. So if you're interested in learning more about that, I would visit that website. I will link it in the podcast description today for you. Hopefully the entire full 10 weeks will be available by the end of May. So if you have the patience and you can wait until the end of May, we will offer a discount if you purchase the entire 10-week curriculum together. So you can purchase a la carte and just buy the ones you want, or you can purchase the entire curriculum and have all 10 weeks. There will probably also be some video libraries. That, you know, video library for parachute, video library for egg shaker games, a video library for scarf play. So you'll sort of have some additional video libraries as well. So exciting stuff. In the meantime, though, if you don't want to purchase the curriculum quite yet, my YouTube channel also has quite a few ideas and activities for Mommy and Me. So check that out. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/dancetolearn. So I hope that you will find us there. And this is all I have for you guys today, but I hope that you found this super helpful. And I will see you next week for another episode of the Dance to Learn podcast. Have a great day, everyone. Happy dancing. Bye. The Dance to Learn podcast airs every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Mountain Time on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. Leave a 5-star review of the podcast, and your review may be read on air for your chance to receive a $10 Amazon gift card. To be a guest on the podcast or for advertising inquiries, please email info@dancetolearn.co. Happy dancing!